about what else was on his mind. "You're not going back to Mississippi, Slade." He looked him square in the eyes. "I hope you know that." The last time somebody told him he wasn't going home, it was Willie's son, Randy. And suddenly Slade could see the family resemblance. Slade looked at his brothers in disbelief. "What you mean, I'm not going back?" He frowned and placed his clenched fist on the table. "I thought we made an arrangement clear when we shook hands. DC not for me or my brothers." He covered his face with a soft smile. "Let me clear up my position. What I'm saying is that I'm going to make you an offer you can't refuse." He looked at Major and Killer. "All of you. Once you see the paper I'm putting on the table, you won't ever go back, except on holidays." He chuckled. Slade eased up a little. Although he was still tense, the money had been great since he'd been in Washington, D.C. It allowed him to be able to rent his own place in Platinum Lofts, pay his brother's hospital bill, and buy a new ride. Not to mention, with having paper, the search for Knox was constantly funded. But it didn't make him like D.C. anymore. His only objective was reconnecting family and returning to Mississippi. "Me and my brothers appreciate everything you've done for us. We do. But you need to prepare yourself for the fact that we are out the moment we find our brother. D.C. may be good for you, but for us, it's bad luck," Slade said in a low voice. "Not to mention, our cousin Marky has been missing for months. It's not like him to up and roll without talking to anybody in the family. Something ain't right." "Ain't no amount of money you can offer up to get us to change our minds," Killer added, ready to board the next thing smoking out of the city. "If you ask me, we losing more than we've gained." Willie's expression was tight, because he was so used to throwing money around to grant his wishes that he couldn't understand rejection. "I'm sorry about your family members. I really am. But unlike the respect I have for Knox when I first met him, I can't say Marky is of the same breed." Slade frowned and sat closer to the table. "Anybody with a Baker name is of the same breed." He sat back in his chair. "Even if he wasn't, it ain't your call. You right? And I ain't mean it in that way. I'm just saying that we do great together. So whether or not you reconnect with your family, I don't see why we should end the relationship. Can you honestly say that you've made as much money ever before in your life as you have with me?" "I can honestly say that none of this shit matters," Slade explained. "Like my brother said, family does. Not to mention, there are a lot of niggas I need to get away from out here before I catch a case." Willie waved his hand for a bottle of scotch to be brought to the table. "Are you referring to Randy? If you are, you need to know he's not moving the same. He's afraid, son. That $100,000 I placed on his head has him stuck. He moved out of his house and everything. And because I met with his connect and made an exclusive deal, he can't cop from him anymore. I went by his house the other day and saw he moved. One of his men said, 'So you see, son, it's all good. He won't be coming out of his hole for a while.'" "You can't trust shit Randy does or says," Major responded. "I'm still not understanding why he would say he had a ransom on my brother's head when he didn't. If I know him like I know I do, it was probably the plan to kidnap your brother." He looked at the Baker boy seriously, but his team doesn't respect him, so maybe something went afoul. "What I want to express to you boys is that we work together, and if taking my son out will make you feel safer, then..." Slade sat up straight. "Get this straight. It ain't a nigga alive who can make me feel unsafe or safer. I'm going back home because there's nothing here for me anymore. Case closed." Killer and Major knew he was referring to Farrah despite never saying the words, but they both knew their brother and can bear witness to the fact that Slade had never been this destroyed before. All of the money and all of the bitches he had in his life couldn't stop his heart from beating for her. "I understand what you're saying," Willie said, sliding the glasses of scotch toward each of them. They weren't the type of niggas to sip scotch, but they accepted the glasses anyway. You have to respect a man with goals. I just know that my business ventures have increased with you boys around. And if there's something I can do to change your minds, I won't stop until I find it. Something in his voice told Slade that in the future, there would be problems with him when it was time to bounce. Besides, any man who would kill his own son could never be trusted. For now, while he was making paper, it was best to stay cordial. And I can respect your diligence, Willie, but the answer will always be no. They were just about to down their drinks when an albino with coal black hair strutted inside the gym with a navy blue gym bag over his shoulder. Willie's men immediately rushed him, knocking him to the floor. His bag was yanked from his grasp, and the contents were searched. When the only things that they found were some boxing gloves, a towel, and a mouthguard, everyone breathed a little easier. Now that things were safe, Willie strode up to him, his brown tailored suit hanging effortlessly off of his frame. He grabbed him up by the top of his shirt, and his men gripped him by the arms. "How did you get in here?" "The door was unlocked." He moved to a point at the door, but Willie's men thought he was making a crazy move and punched him in the gut. The man doubled over before his men stood him up straight again. "I asked you, how'd you get in here?" Willie repeated. "I'm telling you, man, the door was unlocked." "So you calling me a liar?" He frowned, stepping closer. "On everything I love, he said in a weak voice. "The door was unlocked when I walked in here. I wouldn't even fuck around with you like that." Willie was just about to give the order to kill him when one of his men whispered something in his ear. It was then that he remembered that audio went outside to chain smoke, leaving all of them vulnerable. The kid was getting on his fucking nerves, and truthfully, he didn't see his benefit. In his world, he got rid of things that were useless. "Didn't you see the sign that the gym was closed? I come here every Saturday night, man." He paused. "If it was there, I probably overlooked it." He looked around at everyone. "I would have never stepped in here unless I thought it was open for business. All I wanted to do was hit the bag a few times." Willie looked over his light skin, black cotton sweatpants, and matching shirt. He looked harmless enough. Although Willie was prepared to give him the nod of approval, Slade saw something different in his eyes. "Get out of here while you're still able. We're busy right now." Willie shooed him with a wave of his hand. Lollipop grabbed his gloves from the floor when Slade asked, "You box?" Everyone looked at Slade. Lollipop stopped what he was doing, eyed him suspiciously, and said, "I do all right." Slade stood up and approached. "How about me and you go a few rounds?" Killer and Major followed him. Slade stopped inches away from Lollipop. "You got gloves I can borrow, Willie?" "Yeah," he responded skeptically. "We got some in the back." Willie waved his hand, sending one of his men on the search. "I thought y'all were having a meeting," Lollipop interjected. "I'm not trying to break that up." He picked up his mouth guard and towel and seemed in a hurry to go back out. "It ain't a problem. We rounding up anyway." Slade removed his watch and handed it to Major. "You look a little out of it. You sure you came to hit the bag?" Lollipop nodded. "Okay, let's go at it then." This was not the plan. Lollipop was instructed to go to the meeting, see who was present, and report back to Randy. Originally, he knew it was a bad idea to show up at the gym for fear he'd be recognized, but now things seemed much more serious. He heard about how Slade murdered one of Randy's men with his bare hands. He wasn't trying to be his next victim, but after much time and discussion on Randy's part, he reluctantly gave in. "I should have minutes to go one round." Slade grabbed the gloves and wrapped from one of Willie's men, and Major and Killa put them on his fists. When they were secure, he slammed them together and hopped inside the small ring next to them. When he looked down, Lollipop hadn't moved an inch. "You coming in or what?" Lollipop could feel his balls in his throat. Something about Slade told him it was a bad idea, but he couldn't back out now. He didn't even know if the gloves he had would fit, because they belonged to Randy. After one of Willie's men slipped them on, he felt they were too tight, but jumped into the ring anyway.
I'm with it.
Slade smiled, slammed his gloves together, and grinned. Good. Let's do it. He hopped around the ring a few times before throwing a jab geared for Lollipop's jaw. Quick on his feet, he got out of the way just in time. I see you know how to dodge a punch. Let's see if you know how to take one. Using a more calculated move, Slade slammed his glove into his jaw as lightly as possible. His objective wasn't to kill him, at least not right now. He wanted to hurt him to see what he was made of. Still, his lightest blow sent Lollipop flying against the ropes. Lollipop shook his head and tried to toss away the pain. His only objective now was to make it out of the ring alive. I ain't hardly feel shit. He rubbed his throbbing jaw. But I see you, eh? His sentence was broken because Slade stole him in the face again, forcing Lollipop's lips to slap together as he fell to the floor. This time, Lollipop couldn't recall as to where he was or his first name. For a second, he lay in the ring, face up, trying to decipher if he was a man or his cousin Melinda from Virginia. You all right, man? Willie grinned from the outside, because you can stop any time you want. Although the show wasn't planned, he had to admit it was great entertainment. This shit ain't mandatory. Lollipop turned over and crawled to the ropes. With a little strength he had left, he pulled himself up, loosely, dangling from the sides. Finally on his feet, he turned around and faced Slade. Unlike his present condition, Slade looked unscathed. I'm fine, he said to everyone. Give me a second. You sure? Slade asked, with slight remorse. Originally, he was looking to take his frustrations out on someone, considering all of the fucked up things going on in his life. So when Lollipop came in with the gloves, he figured he'd be a worthy adversary. Now, he felt sorry for the man. Because, hey, we can end this now. I said I'm fine. He smashed his gloves together and approached. Stop wasting time, nigga. Come on. Originally, Slade was thinking of the best excuse to let him off of the hook. That was before the left side of his face was met with a crushing blow. The punch took him so much off guard that he fell into the ropes and lost time. When Slade stood back on his feet, he grinned. Maybe he was a worthy opponent after all. Now, he would show no mercy. Before Lollipop could understand the damage he caused, he was struck in the chin with an uppercut that sent him flying out of the ring. He flapped his legs and arms until he landed at Willie's crocodile shoe feet.
Damn! Major cheered. You just space shuttled this nigga!
Ha! Willie laughed heartily. Looking down at him, I think you've had enough, he told Lollipop. You should be going about your way now. He helped him to his feet, and one of his men stuffed Lollipop's bag into his chest. He gripped it with his glove-covered hands and tried to stop swaying. Come back when it's not so busy and get some practice, because you need it. When you do come back, make sure Slade isn't here. One of the Willie's men laughed. Lollipop held tightly to his things, looked at Slade once more, and angrily stomped off. I don't know, Slade, Willie said, approaching the ring. Something tells me you have a new enemy. Killer removed one of his gloves, and Slade said, tell him to get in line. After the boxing match, Slade and his brothers exited the gym, with Willie and his men following them. The Baker boys were about to approach the truck when Slade scanned the outside surroundings. Where's audio? His head swiveled from right to left quickly. Fucking with that dude in the ring, I forgot that he never came back. Killa stepped away from his brothers and from where he stood, looked up and down the dark streets.
I don't know.
He told us he was coming here to smoke a cigarette. He zeroed in on a building on the side of the gym.
Maybe he... Wait. There he goes right there.
Major pointed up the street. Slade glanced up the block and saw his brother on the side of the building, talking to some chick. He was furious for a number of reasons. First of all, he should have come back to the meeting a long time ago. Secondly, the way his body swerved, he could tell he was busted.
Audio! Get the fuck over here, man! We about to bounce!
The girl in audio looked at them. Audio raised a finger and replied,
Give me a second! Your time is up, nigga! Leave that bitch alone and come now!
Killa yelled. The girl frowned and placed a fist on her hip.
Y'all good? Willie asked,
although he wanted to offer his opinion on Audio's recklessness. He thought it was unprofessional and dangerous that he would hang in the shadows when they had beef. He decided against it, knowing it would be bad for business.
Yeah, we fine.
Slade gave him some dap. We'll get up with you later.
Aight, be easy.
Willie and his crew climbed into his navigator and left the scene. Slade refocused his attention on Audio, who was now wobbling toward his brothers. He shook his head, although he understood why he was in a bad way since Chloe was killed. Go help him, Killa, Slade said in disgust, before this nigga falls on his face. Killa and Major offered their shoulders for support as they walked him toward the truck. They were almost there when through Slade's peripheral vision, he could see a car pulling up slowly. When he turned around, he witnessed a black Dodge Caravan slither up the block. When the tinted windows rolled down, three weapons were aimed in their direction. Bullets with their names on them spit from the guns, and Slade saw a glimpse of Lollipop's face as he led the gunfire. He knew something was off with that nigga. The moment he saw his face, and he let him slide. Now his brothers might have to pay with their lives. The Baker boys dropped to the ground, and Slade released the .45 tucked in his waist. When he looked toward his brother to see if they were okay, he saw Killa had already released his hammer and was firing so many bullets at the assassin that the windows were completely destroyed. Together, Slade, Killa, and Major lit the car up like a California wildfire. Holes spattered into the interior of the car as it flew away from the scene. When they were gone, Slade ran up to his brothers and checked them over. Y'all okay? Anybody hit?
Nah, we good, Killa responded,
looking at Major, who was too stuck to respond. I wonder who the fuck that was. He looked down the street.
I know who it is, Slade responded, deciding to keep Lollipop's identity to himself for the moment. And when we catch this nigga, he's gonna wish he landed.
He focused on Audio, who, although still drunk, was a little more lucid.
If you don't get this drunk shit under control, you on the first thing back to Mississippi, nigga.
He stabbed his finger into Audio's chest.
I'm not fucking around with you no more. You ain't the only one who lost somebody. Get over yourself.
I'm sorry, man,
he said, rubbing his hand over his face.
I know you right.
Looks like they landed anyway, Major said, looking up the street.
When Slade saw the girl Audio was with lying in her own blood, he shook his head.
Damn.
Slade slammed Markey's apartment door shut and stomped inside, angry that he hadn't found Eleanor. If he wasn't chasing Audio to make sure he didn't kill himself, he was searching for her. Nobody had seen her on the streets or in the dope houses. Slade even blessed a few dope boys with some money to let him know if she showed up. Nothing. He threw his coat on the couch and walked to the kitchen to grab a bottle of water. When he turned around, he saw his mother, Major, Killa, Audio, and two people he hadn't seen since he'd left Mississippi. His cousins Judge and Grant. He was so focused on Eleanor when he first entered that he didn't see anybody in the apartment. When he saw the looks on his family's faces, he asked,
What's going on?
He focused back on his cousins, Judge and Grant. And what are they doing here, Ma?
I thought we agreed that you would at least give me a chance to bring things under control first. We don't need outside help.
First off, we're not outside help, Judge said, approaching him from the kitchen.
We family, and I think we're getting off to a wrong start.
He grinned.
Slade, I haven't seen you in months, man. Unless you can give me some love.
He opened his arms, but Slade didn't accept. Judge and Grant Baker were both certified killers, and they were anything but practical. When people called them to eliminate a problem, the research should have already been done, which meant they were there for the bottom line to dispose of the problem. Judge stood 6'5", and he was all meat. Although Slade could kill a man with his bare hands, just looking at Judge would force an opponent to change his mind. He was as chocolate as Slade and the rest of the Bakers, but as ugly as a rhino, and he couldn't give a fuck about what you thought about his appearance. He had a beautiful wife, whom he adored, and kept at an undisclosed location. At the end of each job, he returned to her, and they carried on as if blood was not shed. As long as he had her, everything and everybody else was trivial. Grant, on the other hand, stood 5'5", and although he was the shorter of the two, he was the one you had to worry about. He made the decisions and Judge enforced them. Grant always wore a stiff smile on his face to hide his sinister intentions, and the fact that he loved killing was undisputed. So it was obvious why Slade was worried about seeing them. If they were in town, it meant one thing. Farrah was going to die.
Ma, can you tell me why Judge and Grant? Slade asked. You know we were handling the situation. I told you that when you first told me you were reaching out to them.
I want to tell you why I made a decision to call them, baby. But first, were you able to find Eleanor?
Della stood in the middle of the floor and balanced herself on her cane. When he didn't answer, she continued.
Were you able to find her or not, son?
He stepped closer to his mother. In a low voice, he said,
Ma, why you doing this? I'm so close to finding her, and I told you all I needed was a little time. Not to mention the entire Baker family is already in the building. We don't need them.
Close to finding her and finding her are two different things, aren't they, son?
Slade threw his weight into the sofa, placed his hand over his face, and eyed Judge and Grant. They were there to murder somebody he loved, without even considering that she may not be involved. This was the last thing he needed at the moment. It wasn't that he didn't fuck with his cousins, because he loved them. The problem came in choosing between the Baker name and Farrah Cotton.
What happened today? Della asked. When you went to search for her?
I went by her place, but she don't live there no more.
He wiped his hands over his face again and dropped them into his lap.
How you know she moved? Della asked, sitting next to him.
I paid the property manager a few bucks to let me inside her place. Everything she owns is gone, except for some things she had in the refrigerator.
He exhaled.
No way she still lives there.
I'm wondering why she would move, she continued.
I don't know, he shrugged. But the more this chick hides, the more I believe Farrah. She's hiding something.
What you talking about? Killa asked.
Marky was the last person to see Knox, and he said she was good people. As a matter of fact, he threatened to hit him if he disrespected her.
I know all that, but if she didn't have nothing to do with Knox's appearance, why leave? The dope boy said they haven't seen her in days. I know she not clean, so where's she copping from? She's a certified dope head and can't go too long without a hit. And when she tries to find one, I'll be there waiting.
What about Willie? Killa asked.
He used to be cool with her, if I'm not mistaken. She used to sell weed for him. Does he know anything?
I talked to him about her the other day, Della said. Even he hasn't been able to find her.
Okay, so where else could she be then? Grant asked. His voice was calm, but his body was tense.
We have no clue, Major responded.
Well, let me and Judge try a hand at it, man. You've done a lot, and we don't want you thinking you're alone in this shit.
He stepped closer. All we need to know is if she has any family in the area. Who was the last person who saw her? And stuff like that.
Since she's dodging you, maybe she's more likely to talk to us instead.
She doesn't know anything more than she said already, Slade responded. Trust me.
He looked at Judge and Grant. Let me handle this. Besides, Knox is my brother.
Irritated, Grant stepped back.
Let you handle it like you handled protecting audio? Because from what I understand, you almost got killed the other night fucking with you.
He paused.
Oh, I get it. Maybe you want to handle it like you protected Knox. To make matters worse, nobody has seen or heard from Marky.
I don't know, man, but something tells me that the way you doing things ain't working no more.
We ain't come all the way out here to be fucking around, Judge muttered.
He was so tall that his voice bounced off the ceiling.
He's right, Grant added. We came to find Knox. And if you want to find your brother, like you say you do, then you should appreciate our help.
Grant didn't have a chance to defend himself. By the time his last syllable was uttered, he was slumped to the floor and looking up at the ceiling. Judge was about to approach when Killer, Major, and Audio stopped his movements by blocking him like a wall. Slade stood over Grant and gave him his undivided attention.
Nigga, I don't give a fuck if we blood or not. Don't you ever tell me I'm not doing what I can to protect my brothers, Slade said. You better watch your mouth before I break your jaw. And you won't be able to use it to pop that shit no more.
Slade, what has gotten into you lately? Della asked, witnessing her son lose it all.
Ma, I don't have time for this shit.
She smacked him so hard, his neck twisted.
I think you need to remember on who the fuck I am. Don't let this cane fool you.
Della tossed it across the room.
It only lengthens my reach, not limits it. At the end of the day, I'm your motherfucking mother.
Slade felt awful for talking to his mother so recklessly, and he made plans to apologize every day when it was all said and done.
I'm sorry, Ma. I really am. I mean to come at you like that, he said under his breath. I just wanted you to...
Slade, you've been in D.C. too long, son. Too long. And you're making clouded decisions. It's becoming clearer that that girl is a bad influence after all. Judge helped Grant off the floor. And Grant rubbed his bloody mouth and said,
Della, don't worry about it. That was on me.
Slade is deep into this shit, and I came out of the mouth wrong. He looked at his cousin.
I'm sorry about the Knox and audio comment, man, but it ain't like you. Don't you know who we are and what we came to do? We did cleanup work for y'all on things we were taking to our graves.
Slade frowned.
So why you bringing it up now?
Because I think you need a reminder. He wiped his mouth.
Look, I promise we won't hurt your girl. I just want her to answer some questions for us. And after that, we out. Cool?
I won't have her hurt. Slade looked at all of them. I need you all to know this.
Even if she's responsible for Knox's disappearance?
Grant asked.
All my life, if she had anything to do with his disappearance, I will kill her myself.
Be on the same page, then, Grant said,
but we still need to talk to her. As much as Slade hated to admit it, he knew they weren't going anywhere without talking to Farrah. I'll let you talk to Farrah. Just let me speak to her first. Della shook her head. Seeing her son this week for the girl made her stomach churn. Slade, they came up all the way from...
Don't worry about it, Della, Grant said softly. I'll give him that time.
After all, from what I've been told, he really cares about the girl. He focused on Slade. Just as long as you know, I'm not going anywhere until I speak with her. Can we agree on that? I guess I don't have a choice. This shit was making Slade's head ache.
Where y'all staying anyway?
Oh, we got an apartment here in Platinum Lofts. Slade saw blue.
You ain't know? It's a takeover until we can find Knox, man. Shit is beyond serious now. It's deadly.
Chapter 10, Judge and Grant.
It's just a guess right now, but we have to start somewhere.
Although Grant agreed not to speak to Farrah before Slade, he didn't say anything about not questioning other people in the building. After some research, they discovered that Vivian James, the property manager, was missing her son. It was just a hunch, but if Grant learned anything in his many years in the disposal business, it was that his hunches paid off. They decided to pay her a visit. From the outside of the door, they could hear Vivian speaking to someone inside. For a minute, they remained silent, trying to hear anything useful. After a while, they knocked on the door, and Vivian opened it with a smile on her face.
Hello there.
She looked at both of them. In her opinion, they had the kindest eyes.
Are you boys okay? I mean, the apartment is fine, isn't it?
Yes, ma'am, Grant grinned. Everything is perfect. We were actually hoping we could talk to you about something private. She opened the door wider.
Sure, come on inside.
Once they entered, the first thing Grant noticed was three very attractive women sitting on the sofa. They were talking among themselves and didn't seem to know that they were even inside the apartment. Then he saw the pictures of a chubby kid all over the walls, and it was evident that whoever he was, Vivian loved him very much.
I didn't know you had company.
He nodded toward the living room.
This is a bad time. We could come back later.
She waved him off.
Don't worry about it. They were actually just about to leave.
No need, Grant said softly. If we can step to the side for a minute, this will be quick.
Sure,
she said, softly as they moved closer to the kitchen. As always, Judge stood behind his brother and remained silent.
What can I do for you boys?
Well, ma'am, Grant continued, we were wondering if you could tell us anything about Farrah Cotton. Her face went gray, and the pleasantries were over.
Why are you asking?
Because someone very dear to us is missing. Actually, he's been missing for a while now, and we believe that she may have had something to do with it. Of course, we can't prove it, and it's just a guess right now, but we have to start somewhere. Can you tell us anything useful about her? She sighed and appeared saddened.
Actually, I can do better than that.
She turned to the sofa.
Girls, come over here for a second.
The three women strolled toward them, although hesitant. Judge's huge presence usually left a nervous impression on the people he encountered.
This is Lady and Courtney, she said, pointing to two women in tight jeans.
And this is a young lady you'll definitely want to talk to. She resembles Farrah Cotton so much in the pictures that he saw that for a second, Grant grew offensive. Her name is Lessa Carmine, and she was Farrah's old roommate. Grant looked at Judge, and they both grinned. This was the big break they were waiting for. What can you tell us about Farrah Cotton?
Lessa was nervous and looked at Vivian.
It's okay, honey, Vivian said as she rubbed her shoulder gently.
Tell them what they want to know. It's for the best.
She looked at Judge and then Grant.
Well, I could tell you a lot. For starters, you need to know that she considers herself...
Well, she considers herself to be a vampire.
Chapter 11, Farrah.
If you gonna kill me, do it already.
After a long night, Farrah strolled into her apartment and immediately noticed everything was peaceful. She was grateful because it would give her some time to think about her sister. Although she occupied her time with trying to find Eleanor, the pursuit of blood, and the fact that she was no longer with Slade, in the end all she thought about was Chloe. She tossed her purse on the kitchen counter and placed a cup of coffee in the microwave. She contemplated calling Slade again, but knew it was useless, considering her other attempts ended in vain.
He's probably with some young bitch with a cute face and fat ass.
The idea made her sick at the stomach. She ran to the bathroom, released her guts, and wiped her mouth off with the back of her hand. Staring in the mirror, she noticed her skin was not as beautiful, and she needed more blood. To get a little more comfortable, she trudged into her ex-roommate Les's room. Farrah put her out after she failed to pay rent and discovered that she drank blood. Although it had been months since she'd been gone, no one had bothered to properly clean it. The room wasn't the freshest because of all the nasty shit they did to get her out of the house, including Shadow pissing over her bathroom floors. It was the one place she knew her siblings wouldn't bother her. Once inside, she changed into the brown velour tracksuit she kept in the closet and examined her figure in the mirror on the door. Her body was still tight, and despite a few sores on her yellow skin, she looked slightly bronzed. Before leaving the room, she grabbed from under the bed the metal lockbox she purchased some time back. She bought it after Shadow and Mia threatened her life if she didn't stop writing down in her journal the illegal things she did. She entered the code and pulled out her recent book, which was made of red leather. Although she knew she shouldn't keep them, something about writing every day relaxed her mind. Flopping on the edge of the bed, she opened the journal and a list floated in her lap. When she picked it up, she saw the names of those she believed to be responsible for sending the picture of her trying to kill Knox. They were Eleanor McClendon, Lessa Carmine, Nadia Gibson, and her friend Rhonda. Her reasons for thinking they could be involved varied. Eleanor probably wanted her arrested so she wouldn't hunt her down and kill her. Besides, her apartment was right next to the scene of the accident. Then there was Lessa. Although she could see easily why Lessa would want her head, considering how they ripped her clothes, poisoned her drink, and threw her out on the streets, she didn't know her at the time the picture was taken. Nadia also had motive, considering she denied her application as a roommate when she applied to live with her, but she didn't know her at the time the picture was taken either. Finally, there was Rhonda. Although Rhonda was in the car at the time of the accident and could not possibly have taken the picture from that angle, she did mention the picture at the restaurant. With no more answers to who was trying to ruin her life than when she started, she locked her journals back up and left the room. With her coffee out of the microwave, she strolled back into the living room. She was about to sit down when there was a knock at the door. I knew this shit was too good to be true. She placed her coffee down and yelled,
I don't know who you are, but whoever it is, can you please go away?
I don't feel like company right now. She slumped into the sofa and grabbed her coffee cup. Knock, knock, knock. Fuck. She refocused on the door in frustration.
Who is it? She screamed.
placing her cup down and sliding out of her shoes. "It's Vivian James. Open the door, Farrah. We have to talk." If there was one person she hated more than anything in the world, it was the property manager, Vivian. For one, she never wanted Farrah to live in the apartment to begin with, even when she shared it with her boyfriend, Zone, before she pushed him out of the window. For two, Vivian had suspicions that Farrah had something to do with her son being missing. But since she couldn't prove it, she took to stalking her instead. From the couch, she said, "Vivian, I'm kind of busy right now." She focused on the door, hoping she would walk away. "Can you come back later?" "This is about business." She paused. "I need you to open the door, Farrah. It can't wait." Farrah trudged toward the door and flung it open. "What's so fucking important that it couldn't wait, Vivian?" She looked out into the hallway. "Is the building on fire or something?" Vivian was about to give the sassy-mouthed tenant a piece of her mind until she spotted something dried and burgundy on her chin. "What's that stuff on your face? It looks like blood." Goosebumps rose on Farrah's skin, and she spit on her finger, rubbed her chin, and said, I ate some candy or something earlier." She appeared nervous, and her lips trembled. "Now, I know that's not what you wanted with me, so what's up?" She exhaled and shook her head. "Okay, as you know, I've tried to honor the fact that your sister died. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to do that much longer." "What the fuck do you mean you tried to honor the fact that Chloe died? Bitch, she's not here anymore. There's nothing to honor about that." Vivian stepped back. "You know what I mean." "I don't know what the fuck you talking about. How about you explain yourself?" Vivian took two deep breaths. "Maybe that was the wrong choice of words, and I'm sorry if you took it the wrong way. It's just that, well, unfortunately, you aren't the only one who has lost someone, and recently at that. Let us not forget that my son is still missing, and I still don't know where he is." She gave her a knowing look, an accusatory look. "My loving son is out there and anything could be happening to him right now. So trust me when I say I know what you're going through." "And I told you I didn't have anything to do with that, Vivian." She lied. "If I knew anything about your son, I would have told you. You're forgetting one thing. My sister was killed and your son could still be out there somewhere. With all that said, what do you want with me right now?" Vivian shook her head. "Farrah, where is your rent for the month? It's beyond late, and I can't wait for it any longer." "Oh," she sighed. "What are you talking about?" "I'm talking about the rent is due the first of the month." She looked at the yellow chart in her hand. "And we're beyond that period right now. Every month, I have to collect personally with you. You're the only one who can't seem to understand the importance of paying on time." "I doubt that very seriously. I know for a fact that before Lucia and them moved, they paid when they wanted. Anyway, how come everybody but me gets a 15-day grace period?" "Because you have been known to take the grace period and some more, Farrah. And just when the paperwork goes in to have you evicted, you come up with the money. It's always an excuse with you. I can't pay my rent right now because I have a hair appointment. I can't pay my rent right now because I gotta pay my light bill. It's annoying at best." She paused. "And to be honest, since Zone was murdered..." "Zone wasn't murdered," she interrupted. "My man fell out the window in this building due to it not being up to code, remember? Because of that shit, his family was paid millions. So if you gonna tell the story, tell it right." "You know what? Sometimes I think you escaped from Crescent Falls." Farrah tilted her head. She didn't know what Crescent Falls was. "What is that?" "Oh, it doesn't matter." She laughed. "Because the bottom line is this. Since you've lived here alone, you've had nothing but weird people in and out of this apartment. I've let the leasing company know, but they don't seem to care right now. But I do.
and you should be aware that I am keeping my eyes on you.
I'm not allowed to have company? If that's the case, why am I paying rent? I mean, if you're clocking who comes in and out of my apartment, shouldn't you be paying my bills for me?
Don't be ridiculous.
No, you don't be ridiculous. I said I'll pay the rent, and for real. Unless you can do something now, all you can do is wait. Now, is there anything else? Because my coffee is getting cold.
Nothing for now, Farah. I'm just here to let you know that I'm watching you. And from what I learned recently, some other people are too. She grinned. Farah's eyebrows pulled together.
What does that mean?
Vivian wore a look of satisfaction.
Don't mind me.
Oh, I almost forgot to tell you that Lessa and her friends said hi. Farah tried to remain calm, although her body trembled.
So, you talk to her now?
Sometimes, but they have such vivid imaginations. Can you believe that they told me you drink blood? She shook her head. Young people these days will say anything. It's settled. Lessa and them bitches she rolls with gotta go.
I'm not worried about the shit you saying, because everything you speak is lies.
I guess we'll find out. Just know that the countdown has started for your rent. I won't wait a day past the 15th to file an eviction. That much I promise. When she left, Farah slammed and kicked the door.
Dumbass bitch, always in my fucking business.
I'm not going to take you fucking with me any longer. Be careful. Be really careful. She paced around the kitchen until the house phone rang. Her temples thumped, and she wanted to do something to make her feel better. The last thing she wanted was to speak on the phone. Still, she snatched it off the wall and said, "Whoever this is, now is not the time."
"Farah, how are you?" Randy asked calmly.
"It's been a long time." Scared, she stumbled back into the stove. She hadn't heard his voice since she went to his house the day Slade and his father set him up and robbed his stash houses. Even then, they had a few choice words, and she hoped that she wouldn't hear from him again. She was wrong.
"What do you want with me, Randy?"
She stood up straight and looked at the tiles on the floor.
I'm kind of busy right now.
"Come on. Is that some way to treat somebody who looked out for you since you were too young the fuck? Who gave you money for your rent, apartment, and clothes? Who put you in your first car?" He chuckled. "And looked out for you when that punk-ass nigga you fucked with couldn't afford to take care of you? Come on, Farah. I deserve more respect than that." She opened the refrigerator and grabbed a beer. "Fuck coffee."
"I don't have time for this shit right now, Randy," she said,
although she knew he didn't care.
"My sister died, I don't feel good, and I'm really tired. So if you gonna kill me, do it already, but please don't call my fucking house again."
"Oh, you talk to me like I didn't understand your sister died already. Don't you understand that that's the only reason you still alive? I deserve a little more credit than that, bitch." While he was talking, it dawned on her that he could have sent the picture. Since she's known him, he'd done everything in his power to stalk her. Maybe this was his way of fucking with her mind.
"Randy, can I ask you something?"
"What?"
"Did you send that shit to my house?"
Silence.
"Randy, did you send a picture to my house? If you did, it's fucked up that you trying to ruin me like that. All I ever did was love you."
He laughed. "You always got some shit going on, don't you? No matter what, you just can't just live a normal life."
"Whatever, Randy."
He laughed. "I just wanted you to know that you're still on my radar. You and that nigga you deal with."
"And my father, too?" She paused. "Hey, whatever Tank does to that man while he's in jail is on him."
"You should know. Asher is stronger than you." She tried to convince herself.
"If anything, I'm afraid for Tank."
"If that's true, I guess we'll see.
I just hope you're having a good time with life, Farah, because it won't be yours much longer."
Farah was preparing to respond when someone in the background on Randy's end said, "Welcome to Serenity Meadows. How can we help you?"
"Hello?"
Farrah said into the phone, "Hello?" When she looked at the phone, Randy was gone. But why? Farrah snatched her purse off the counter and stomped toward her bedroom. The only thing she was interested in at the moment was relaxing and taking a nap. But when she opened the door to her room, she wanted to jump out of her skin. When she saw Shadow in her bed with Kendall and Raven, two girls from down the hall. Kendall's hair was wrapped around Shadow's fist as he pumped her from behind, while her cousin Raven was face up under Shadow's nutsack as she licked his balls. Farrah couldn't stand either of them, mainly because they were loud, ridiculous, and always fighting in the hallway. Although someone would probably say the same thing about her, she would dispute it to the fullest.
"Hold up! What the fuck are y'all doing in my house?"
she screamed. That was one of the things she hated about her apartment. There had been many times when she thought she was alone and almost got caught talking on the phone about private matters.
"And why don't you go in your room, Shadow?"
She stepped farther into the room and was angry when she stepped on one of the panties with her bare foot.
"Yuck! Ugh!"
She kicked it away. "Oh, my bad, Farrah," Shadow said, covering up his dick with the edge of the sheet, leaving the girls naked.
"I heard you were out there, so I tried to keep the girls quiet. We almost done. Check back in a minute."
"You're not answering my question." She placed her hands on her hips.
"How come you in my room? What's wrong with yours?"
"Because my room ain't got no TV, and your ex-roommate's room stinks." He grinned, as if shit was funny.
"Don't worry, we about to bounce."
"You know what? I want both of these bitches out of my house in the next 15 minutes. If they not gone, I'm gonna start swinging."
"Wait, who the fuck is you talking to?"
Raven said, covering her body with Farrah's robe.
"You don't have to be all wild and shit just because this is your house."
"Shorty, you don't know my sister," Shadow said, snatching the robe from her. On second thought, "Get your shit and get the fuck out, both y'all bitches. I already bust anyway." When she remembered she had asked him to get something for her, she said, "Did you at least get the medicine I asked for?" He looked at her strangely. She guessed he didn't want her to say it in front of them.
"Yeah, it's in my room on my dresser. I don't know what you want with it, but be careful."
Farrah stormed out of her room, grabbed the meds, and called the one person she thought she wouldn't talk to in a while. Coconut's new apartment had Farrah jealous the moment she stepped inside. The latest technology, from flat-screen TVs to expensive surround systems, was everywhere. The couch was made of expensive cream leather, and the carpet was nice and plush. There was even a picture of Coconut and Jake on the wall, like they were a married couple, as she wanted to throw up at how happy they looked. It seemed like everything around her reminded her that Slade dumped her, and she felt worthless. Originally, Coconut and Farrah were supposed to share an apartment together in Platinum Lofts, but Jake, Coconut's boyfriend, decided that he wanted her to himself, and since Jake was a dope boy with heavy money, and Farrah was always broke, there was no competition. As far as Farrah knew, Jake didn't fuck with her, so she was surprised she was allowed into their house. Something was off. A few drinks later, Farrah was relaxed and surprised because Jake seemed to be really cool. His tall, lanky body resembled a ball player's physique, and his dope boy swag made him even more appealing. It was easy to see why Coconut chose him. They were sitting in the living room watching TV when Coconut said, "So you've been holding up okay? With Chloe being gone and all? Because I know even though y'all fought so much, she loved you and you loved her." Farrah sighed. "I'm holding up as best as I can." She focused back on the movie and grabbed her drink. "I just got a lot I'm trying to sort out. A lot of shit is catching up with me."
"What do you mean?"
"It's a long story, but I do appreciate you having me over." Farrah's mind floated to Eleanor.
"Hey, you remember that white lady, Eleanor? I think you called her the clapper."
"Yeah, I get my weed from her, why?" Farrah tried to remain calm. Coconut told her that she copped weed from her before, but it totally slipped her mind.
Do you still see her?
Yeah, I saw her earlier today. She reached in the ashtray and pulled out the blunt they just smoked.
You just helped me smoke her shit. She got the best.
Where she gets it?
I think she get it from Willie, Randy's father.
She shrugged.
But who knows?
Farrah was breathing so heavily. She was hyperventilating. When
you gonna see her again?
Coconut looked at her worriedly.
I'm not sure. She told me she'll get in contact with me because she has to get out of town. Sounded pretty scared for some reason.
She touched her hand.
Are you okay?
Because you look flushed.
I'm fine.
She lied, trying to calm down. But thanks anyway. Farrah didn't want to press the issue, but she had to revisit the Eleanor topic soon. Asking too much might send Coconut's antenna through the roof.
I still can't believe Shadow had them bitches from down the hall in my bed, girl. I almost murdered all three of them. What the fuck type shit was that?
Coconut laughed.
Girl, he did just come from jail, you know.
She laughed.
I'm surprised his fine ass hadn't kicked the freak party off a long time ago.
She shook her head. Secretly, she was crushing on Shadow, but had no intention of letting him know. As the girls were in mid-conversation, Jake walked back into the living room, holding a beer.
Farrah, you ever talk to my man Park again?
Park was Farrah's ex-boyfriend, who she met in high school. In fact, she and Coconut met Jake and Park at the same time. But Farrah couldn't get with him after a while because he was too weird in the bedroom. For instance, he got off when she stuck her finger up his ass and coughed on his dick. In the end, she always felt weird around him, so she decided to leave him alone. Although she licked the tip of his dick a few times, she never fucked him. And to be honest, she never regretted it either. Not to mention, she always thought he wanted Coconut instead of her.
You know, I wasn't really feeling Park like that, Jake.
She laughed.
That nigga was way too weird for me.
Why you ask anyway?
Because he asks about you all the time.
He sat close to Coconut and rubbed her knee.
He said the other day that he didn't like the way you carried him. Said you started fucking with his cousin or some shit like that.
Who's his cousin? Farrah asked.
Randy. When he saw the expression on her face, he said, wait, you ain't know that shit?
Farrah turned blue.
No, I mean, me and Randy were together, but he's not that kind of nigga who likes to talk about other dudes, so it never came up.
Farrah scratched her head.
I really didn't know that shit.
Yeah, that's his cousin.
He paused.
Don't worry about it, though. Park is married to some broad he met from Jersey, so he couldn't have been that mad. Plus, we were kids back then.
He rubbed Coconut's knee harder.
On another note, I've been telling Coconut y'all don't need to be beefing, so I'm glad y'all put the drama behind you.
Jake was cool, but he was starting to give Farrah the ills. Why did he care if she spoke to Coconut or not?
So when is the wedding day?
Farrah asked, nodding at the picture.
I see y'all playing house and can't keep your hands off each other.
Girl, when I'm able to satisfy him all the way around the board, she paused and looked into his eyes.
Well, at least that's what he keeps telling me.
He nudged her leg. Stop playing. You know how I feel about you.
I hear you.
Coconut responded.
I still want the ring, though.
She looked into his eyes and he looked away.
Why you ask when we're getting married?
Because it's time to make it official. Y'all been together forever and virtually married now.
Plus, I see your love.
We beyond love at this point. It's way deeper than that,
Coconut told her. We got an understanding that works for both of us. She kissed Jake on the lips, and Farrah grew hot between the legs. They appeared seconds away from creating a porno.
No doubt, Jake said. I've been telling my shorty I never fuck with a female like her before.
I just want to make sure she's willing to do any and everything she can to satisfy me.
Haven't I given you everything you've asked, Jake?
She looked over at him.
When I wanted to move in with Farrah, you begged me to get a place with you.
Didn't I leave?
And when you wanted that thing, didn't I arrange it? I've given you everything, but this. Farrah didn't like not knowing the secret.